You hear me okay? I'll be brief because I know you don't really want to hear about me, but I am a structural engineer. I'm presuming you're interested to hear me question architects. Simpson, Cumberton & Hager is a 60-year-old engineering consulting firm, primarily focused on buildings and infrastructure, two divisions, structural engineering and building enclosure design. And within those two divisions, we design projects from scratch, do repair rehabilitation of existing buildings, and also investigations of structures that don't perform as intended or just outlive their useful life. Our Chicago office is no longer our newest office. We have Houston now, but we're about 2 years old. Six folks transferred out here in both, three in each division from Boston. And in the last year and a half, we've grown to almost 16 or 17. I think we'll be 18 by the end of the year. And that's in part because we've met a lot of great people here in the city of Chicago. We've been able to attract a lot of work already. So we're very excited to be here and to continue to grow here. So thank you. I think the next step is to let our panelists introduce themselves. I think this is the only mic we have. No, that's not going to work. This one. Okay, perfect. Now we're rolling.
I'm Scott Lumpton. I'm with Clayco, principal with Form Studio, which is our wholly owned full-service architecture firm. We are an integrated delivery real estate company, and pretty excited to be here and answer any questions you have. And Kyle, we took up our delivery process a little bit from the norm.
Hello, I'm Ted Strand, and I'm a partner with Saab & Coldwell in Chicago. We are an architecture, planning, and interior design firm. We have a Chicago office and a San Francisco office, and we're about 250 people, and I know a lot of you folks are in looking forward to it.
My name is Rocco Castellano, and I'm a associate principal at Naval Heritage Architecture, a Chicago firm. We are
just hold on to it, we'll go back and forth. So I have a series of questions here. We'll ask initially a question of the entire panel. We'll do some individual questions, and then we'll come back at the end for a summary from each one. My first question selfishly is, why don't you hire me all the time for every job? I'm kidding. I'm not really, but I'll let you guys go whatever order you want.
Where do I start?
This reason. What is a decision-making process that architects use to choose their sub-consultants?
We have an 8-ball that we sit down and pretty scientific. Actually, it's reasonably direct. We work like everybody in lots of different markets. And so, as we try to position our firm as experts in certain market sectors, we also look for our consultants to show, their related experience that is in connection with the pursuit. So it's not scientific. We know so many of your firms that we kind of have some consultants that we go to regularly in some marketplaces, but others that we're not maybe as invested in. We're always looking at
the qualifications on resumes and on the work as it relates to the pursuit. I think we look at selection of consultants as based on past performance and successes of projects that have been delivered. I think if we venture out and prepare other consultants for private teams, it would be based on relevant project experience, kind of similar to what you're describing. But I think also we're looking for a cultural compatibility. I think we are using past performance as a criteria just because of how we work and the people who we work with kind of know what we expect. And I think that is the most important criteria that we may not be able to get from all
I think the most important thing is to get a team that's right for that project, and we select our folks and our teams based upon what's going to benefit our client and our owner the best. If we are the client and the owner, it makes the selection a little bit easier because it's usually the partners that we've worked with, we've had good success for, and then understand our sense of urgency. And again, I think that's really the response time that you get out of folks in our industry right now is probably our primary thing. Thanks, Matt.
So a follow-on question for everyone. Strategy is obviously an important part of how you hire and what type of project you're pursuing. Does relationship with an existing consultant ever trump strategy?
I can speak for that. It does a lot of times. I mean, if we've just been working on a similar project and we present that to a client and it's a similar type project we're going after, why ruin the band if it's already working well?
I totally agree. I think that this is a relationship business. So I really think that if you have formed a good relationship as a consultant with an architectural firm, that can often have a lot of sway in the business. So never discount the relationship as a determining factor.
I think that I look at it as a greater kind of view of the industry. I mean, clients are looking to architects to make sure that they are comfortable in finding the right fit, and that is where work comes in. I think with our consultants, that you know, is a similar process. I mean, we find that a lot of the projects that we're facing are fast-paced, and there's a lot of need to risk the unknown. And so I think sometimes, yes, I think that relationship will trump.
So if your office is stretching their wings to a new project type for you, do you look for consultants that fit the type of project you're pursuing, or do you look for that long history you have with the client to try to differentiate yourself that way?
Well, it's clearly a project-by-project kind of decision-making process, but I think you are, many of you service architecture firms, and so I don't want people that don't work with any of us to be dispirited by the relationship trumping thing, because there's a lot of firms that we work with now that we did not have relationships with 10 years ago, and it was a result of a lot of efforts that were put on by behalf of people like you in this room. And so I think that we are, as a firm, we are always open to new relationships and always open to trying to find and identify people that have skill sets in particular areas. So do not be despondent that, you know, this is a relationship thing, because you should be working towards forming new relationships with the groups that you don't work with.
I think it is a project-specific kind of case selection of consultants. Sometimes innovation trumps partnerships, or a specific project prior experience that we may not have a great depth in. So I think that is also part of the criteria.
And office locations as well. I mean, if you're working nationally and you're a firm that has national locations, that can sometimes be a benefit. And so it's market and location that often drives the decision.
I think a lot of times our partnerships are based on sharing leads and sharing marketing opportunities. You go out and you co-market for a project and you develop that relationship and you start to develop that relationship. Everybody has client needs, and trying to get the deals together is just half the battle.
I think some of the greatest challenges we've seen maybe would be venturing outside of our regional market. We're in the Chicago firm, and I know that other firms are more national, and their interests are more widespread. But when we venture outside of our region, we have to do a lot more research to make sure we have the right quality. So I think that is something that we have to do.
I'm going to say one thing on this lead sharing. Never think that the architects that you might serve don't keep track of the leads that you're distributing to. I mean, we do. And I think that that's an important thing to be cognizant of, that we are aware of who we're working with and how much fee goes to people. And there is a sense of reciprocity that we do expect. And I think that's important for people to recognize as you try to form these relationships. It is lead sourcing, and it's not sending a lead that's come over that's a lead that has been available to everyone. It's introductions, it's all sorts of things that can be done to enhance the relationship building process. But we do keep track of it, so I wanted to mention that.
We hear that a lot as consultants, is if you can bring us a lead. And sometimes it's tough from the back seat or the third seat in the station wagon to throw a lead up to the front seat, but we're aware of it. I should add that, especially since we're down a panelist today, there's probably going to be some extra time, so if the audience has any questions at any point, just raise your hand and I'll call on you, and if I don't see you, scream very loudly. So Ted, I have a question for you then. A lot of architectural firms are discretized by studios or other sort of subgroups. As a consultant, I may work with one of those groups, but maybe not the others. What's the best means for a consultant to get introductions to or opportunities with other studios or discretized groups within the architectural firm?
First of all, keep the eye on the prize with the work that you have in front of you. I think that's really important. We've had new clients where I've tried to be aggressive about marketing to developers or other clients, and done it too soon before, you know, we kind of finished the work at hand. So I think there's a lot of timing that's involved in that. If you think architectural firms are coordinated, you're wrong. We try to be cognizant of different market sectors, who's working for whom, and all of that. But I think doing the job at hand is probably the most important thing. And then that work will hopefully speak for itself. If you make people aware of being involved in other markets and all that. Again, it's a slow build. These things don't happen overnight, but you have to kind of keep your eye on the prize. And if you're targeting a certain firm to expand your work, then you have to kind of target that and do things in a kind of slow progression, because you don't ever want to try to sell too much too soon.
I think somebody mentioned culture. I think when we really look at teaming, whether it be whichever one of our, we don't really have silos or studios or things like that. We just have a lot of people that do great work, and we apply them to different projects as they come in. And it's usually based upon their relationships, but it's trying to get the team that's perfect for that project together at the same time. The job is the boss is the term that we use. And I think so that as the culture is developed, they need to become teaming partners, and we truly try and get to a teaming partner relationship, because that makes a lot of fun to work together. That's where we start to drive, and that's where you get your bandwidth, and you can do really good work very quickly.
Yeah, I think we don't have studios. We all work on projects. So I think that it's probably not a topic that we haven't experienced with. So
then, Ted, as a follow-up, you mentioned earlier that you're aware of what you pay out in terms of fees to various consultants, and you talked a little bit about the sense of reciprocity. Do you also internally talk about the consultants and how they're performing from group to group or studio to studio to share that data as well?
Very much so. It's my job to be aware of this, the issue. I mean, it's my job to be aware of who's working with who. The studios aren't so much aware across the office why who's working with who. There's probably three people in our office that are cognizant of the cross-fertilization. But within that performance side, it's very, very important, and we have studio meetings that happen once a week. We ask for, not weekly, but I'd say on a monthly basis, we understand exactly who's performing well from a consultant basis, who's not, and what the reasons are. So it's a very, very important issue that is tracked, not religiously and not scientifically, but it is cognizant by the
I think we look at it from a return on the investment, and that's not necessarily just a fee. I mean, it's a return on the time that our people have to participate with our consultants. Can our consultants run on their own and not get us into trouble? And so we kind of look at it a little bit bigger picture, again, back to that holistic project team that really gets the job done. Because if I can back off some of my staff because my structural engineer, as an example, is hitting a home run, and like you would, then I can back off, and that helps the overall fee of the project, right? We can allocate our resources to something that's the next issue that we have to try and resolve. So it's more of a return on investment with our partners and again, the relationship.
So in my experiences, that strikes me as a little different than the typical architectural clients I'm working with, where it's more job to job. Ted, do you think that's the case, or do you have a similar approach to Clayco in terms of ROI or Rocco?
I think we are always cognizant of who's performing well and who's doing a good job. You know, there's no real formula to this. We try to constantly build on success with clients that we have. I mean, I keep track of things like repeat clients. So we have about an 82% repeat client. That means that a lot of those repeat clients, the same consultants, follow along with that. So I think success is built on a number of factors. We try to be understanding of where success has come from. We try to be understanding where our failures come from. And then, you know, try to mitigate that on the next time.
I think with respect to understanding the build project teams that are out there, we would probably know the performance of every project because of the size of our firm. You know, everybody is knowledgeable about all projects and how
they
project teams. So I think that's kind of how we measure that.
Thank you. Any questions from the audience? You guys are supposed to be an outgoing group. Come on. Thank you.
So if there's a, let's just say it's a municipal pursuit, and you have a ton of experience. I work for an engineering firm. We've got a ton of experience with this type of project. Do you guys, architects have given me different answers in regards to, do you want the engineer to be on several teams of people that are pursuing, or do you want them to be, you know, will you stay in a silo with us for this?
Well, I'll answer that. From our standpoint, that's a case-by-case deal. On a public project, I think it's very difficult to ask somebody to try to commercially do yourself damage by being exclusive. I don't ever ask that. I really don't look for that because I think it's limiting your view. And, you know, in the food chain, you're down the food chain, so I don't expect to do that. I do when it's something where there's a design involved and there's something that you're putting forward ideas and you're trying to, you know, you're involved in design competition, yeah, then we would expect exclusivity. But not on a public project pursuit where we know that you're, that most of the firms are going to be on multiple teams.
I think it's project by project. Again, if you're in a competition scenario, you're sharing your thoughts and things like that, and that's going to be the competitive decision-making edge. Then you have to, if you're thinking of some mechanical systems or something like that that's going to put you different and differentiated from your competitors, that might be a situation where you ask them to kind of run with your team and your team only. But we don't do too much of the governmental work yet, but I suppose in that marketplace it'd be even more difficult.
I think it's important just to be declarative that you are a multiple team. I don't, you know, on those types of pursuits where it's a public project, and we kind of understand that you'll be a mobile team. I don't always ask, but it's always nice to go off with that, so it's just that we're aware.
I mean, experience is often, it's really not an important issue. We know that there's competition and competition on projects, and that's part of what we're doing as strengths. Put together our best team, and so is everybody else that are buying for the same position.
Go ahead.
A question to the panel about what's your strategy when you're putting together consultants for meeting very high minority participation goals here in the city of Chicago and on federal and state conferences?
I just know we have a very aggressive program integration program within the whole enterprise to try and not only meet those requirements but exceed those, and that comes straight from the top of our food chain at the Bob. And so we work incredibly hard to have those relationships already established. So we tend not to have too hard of a time hitting minority and people on business requirements because we have those relationships in place and we're continuing to grow them all the time. Just as a matter of our business practice, whether it's a requirement or not. Even on our non-required projects, we have the same protocols in the office.
I think with participation, I think we also have good relationships with the people that are competitive on those projects, and we maintain discussion that we had before about past relationships. You know, if you perform well and you have a match in our culture, I think that's, you know, where it's go ahead and see what people are.
Our strategy is to look at the minority and women-owned business to play a meaningful role and to play a role that's described and that you know the roles and responsibility of the role. And I think where it gets dicey is if there are some of these relationships that are formed and it's not declarative as far as what services you're going to perform on the job, then it's a muddle. It's a muddle for the client, it's a muddle for everyone. So we try very hard to find firms that we can partner with that play meaningful roles, that is descriptive in what their role is and discreet, and go from there. But if we're not forming a team where there's meaningful participation from the minority and women-owned business, it's very apparent to the owner, and it's really normally we lose those jobs. So we try very hard to find what that role is and make sure that everybody understands.
Yeah, we often prime jobs as well, and I think we're trying to do the same thing here in Chicago. It's fine consultants we like to work with regularly, as you said, and it's independent of whether there's a requirement or not as you build the relationships in the portfolio together so that when there is a requirement, it doesn't look thrown together, that you have a history together, and you know the working relationship, and then you can do as Ted says, you give meaningful roles to everybody on the team.
I'm hopeful that those rules will start to mature a little bit where we start to talk about really looking at the cross-section of people that's on a project, let alone who's and which ones are getting certain amounts of money. I mean, it's really about promoting everybody to be successful, no matter what their skin color or sexuality is, right? That's really what we're trying to do, is get to the bottom of having an open playing field for everybody in the workforce. That's when society will start to benefit from it.
Yeah, it's... I think as your company's integrated top to bottom and we're a larger firm, it gets harder and harder because you're a larger percentage of a job sometimes. And it's difficult to set up, even though our firm is incredibly diverse. So I'm going to start with Scott on this question, but I'd like to hear the responses from others because I think it may be different. Scott, you are an architect, but you work in a firm that is sort of almost fully integrated top to bottom from the beginning of concept and financing all the way through construction. So I'm curious what, from your perspective, both traditionally as an architect, but in your firm's role, what are the most important activities and services to the architect during the course of a project? And do you see those differently now that you're in a firm such as Clayco?
Well, obviously, you know, some will say I crossed to the dark side. I don't look at it that. I feel like I finally came into the light. It took a while for you to get there. Now you can vouch for me on that. But again, our organization is about breaking down traditional barriers that frustrated all of us. And those contractual barriers that are between organizations that are really trying to do the right thing and hit the end goal. Everybody here is very brilliant at what they do. They work really hard to be good at what they do, and they're passionate about what they do. And then we run into these silly barriers, whether it be a procurement barrier from a governmental agency or just some nuance that somebody doesn't want to change. So that's really what we look for when we put our projects together, is what's the smart way to deliver this project this time? And then go out and find those people. And then we kind of backtrack into, you know, oh, they don't fit that mold or they don't fit that requirement, and then we figure out how to fix that. So again, I think the way that when we look at the projects, the way I look at projects now and creating my teams, it's trying to look at how do we get to the end goal as quickly as we can, because that's where the big money's at. If you take some of the old procurement process and the design bid build process, it extends out the procurement time. And if we can shrink that for a client by 6 months and the general conditions are $250,000, you have another $1.5 million to put back into bricks and mortar. And so we really look at how we develop that process to have the right team that has the correct sense of urgency at that time. You may have a preferred partner that you love working with, but you've already got them on 10 projects and they're already going full steam ahead. It's really hard to throw another one on, or you're not going to help them be successful. You're actually hurting them, even though you're one of your preferred vendors, right? So you have to look from the top to bottom on that when you're trying to select folks and see who's the right fit for that day.
This is a really changing industry, and I think Clayco is probably the indicative of how really changed this industry is. And I give Bob a lot of credit, give you a lot of credit for the model that you have. However, there's still a lot of us that are in kind of the world of maybe yesterday. I don't know, maybe that's the best way to describe it. But it is a very, very fast-changing industry. The delivery methodology is changing really rapidly. It's incumbent on all of you to understand how it's changing. It's incumbent on all of you to understand how the industry is being kind of amalgamated, how so different groups are being bought, different groups are growing. It's really important that you as marketing professionals understand the industry that you occupy. And I'll guarantee you it's changing. And so it's really important that you're aware of the change. It's really important that you figure out a strategy of how to deal with that change. And I'll guarantee you, I don't have the answers for it. I'm just aware of it and try to be very, very reactive in terms of understanding how these changes impact a privately held firm that's competing with a lot of different delivery models. So all of you should be equally aware and nimble in the way that you respond to this very changing landscape.
I think the strength of one delivery model method over the other should be kind of compared to the owner organization, the client organization, and what their goals are. I mean, not all goals are the same and all clients are the same. So I think relative to how to deliver a project and how our relationship with us design professionals, I think is depending on the client's perspective, what they want to gain out of it. And so I think they'll know kind of the strengths and weaknesses of different delivery paths. And I think we would probably say that, yes, there are some projects that would better suited to one of them that would be better, but I don't think we would be exclusive.
I think I would add, too, another, as I reflect back on my position roles as a principal in an architect firm versus an integrated firm, we still, if I put my Clayco hat on for a little bit, on the design side or on the construction side, we still team with older architecture. Actually, all of our enterprises, all the entities that are part of the enterprise have a responsibility to do third marketing work. So our architect firm, we only do about 60% of our work for Clayco Enterprises. The rest we're doing in the traditional models. Again, it really is tailoring the right delivery method for the client. There are certain clients that, again, our critical path on most projects is owner decisions. It's not procurement, it's not design, it's not construction, it's not the stuff that all of us in this room do. It's getting and extracting that information so we hit a home run with that client. But the reflecting back and looking, now that I have a chance to have five or six other architecture firms that we work with on a day-to-day basis, and comparing what they do well and what others do, you know, better than others. And some people are hitting a home run on one thing, but not so much on maybe the models aren't as accurate, but the design is fabulous. So I think there's a place in whichever delivery method the project is suited for any of the architecture firms. You don't have to, you know, totally buy into one delivery method. I think you just have to become comfortable with it and understand it and ask tons of questions. I mean, the biggest thing is just misconceptions at the time that you create the team.
I might regret what I'm about to say.
It's being recorded, just so you know.
I actually think the contractors are the ones that are at the leading edge of this new industry that we face. And I think that the contractors have been the ones that have shown the most leadership in being nimble and adapting to a changing landscape. I think that it happens normally on the coasts. I know in our California office, it's a primarily design-build environment in California. There's delivery methods in California that are, you know, have not arrived in Illinois, but I will guarantee you they are on their way, and they're going to shape our worlds. And you're going to all have to learn how to deal with it, how to speak the language, and how to be responsive to it. And I think the contractors are the ones that have, because many of them are kind of natural in practice, they've been the ones that have kind of led the way on this. And so I just urge you to be all aware of what's probably coming to Illinois, because in other places that can practice that really need some, either California or the East Coast, because it's going to happen here. Because the way that we deliver buildings in the public sector here, the way we develop buildings in the
even in the private sector, it's not as progressive as it is on the website.
With respect to you know, our relationship with different delivery methods, I think design build is becoming a new kind of movement in some of the repeat program clients or clients that we have in a lot of the higher ed projects or the municipal projects are hearing more towards that. So I think I think it's in the same vein as what we've been discussing elsewhere. And you know, in selecting our design build partners, you have to make sure that the culture is compatible. And I think that's it's always going down to that same, I think, theme is that the way you practice architecture should be compatible with the partners that you select, whether it's a contractor or a consultant.
So Ted, I agree with everything you just said and what you also initially said in terms of being adaptable to change. Does every group, to be successful and efficient, like Scott's talking about, have to get into a single institution and be uniform from top to bottom like Clayco, or is there a way we can get there? And if there is, and I agree with you about the contractors, who's the impediment right now in the team to getting more integration without necessarily becoming a single organization top to bottom?
This movement of design build and the methodologies of delivery, you know, California is probably the leader in this, at least in being open to exploring. I think there's a lot of room in the industry for everybody. I don't think that there's any reason to be fearful of you know, like the AECOMs of the world and all these groups that are working under big umbrellas. I still think that this is a very, very local industry that we serve. But what I'm saying in terms of this nimbleness, I think, in terms of like design build, I think the MEP world is the one that's going to be most affected by it, because the scope of the MEP professional is now becoming limited because so much of it is happening in the field. Certain markets don't allow that, but permitting process that still demands a higher level of performance and documentation. But what's important for every one of us as consultants to do, to be successful, to continue to be successful, is to be aware of trends. And then it's important for you to find out where you can add value in that process. If you've had scope that's been limited, then find out where you can add value in a process that can start to, you know, identify you as someone that they want on your team because you add value, because you understand the process. So I think there's a lot of room for everyone in this industry, but I think it's really important that everybody understand how it's changing and how you can fit in with that, with those changes.
I agree with that. I mean, it's the thought leadership that comes from the professional consulting world that really is the value of the project, not really who they're contracting to.
Right.
It's that thought leadership, and that is something that's owned by each individual out there in these practices, whether they're big or small. Like I said, that's the fun of putting a team together right now, is because we can select, even though we're integrating a team, it's not the organization, right? So we may have a different financing organization, different construction company, but we're the architectural design project, and it's still an integrated process that we can bring to the table since we have some good experience in that. And we love bringing that program to that.
I'll just give you an example of how it's changed. San Francisco Airport, it's all designed built at San Francisco Airport. All the interviews are based upon how you perform, the day-to-day people, not the principal, but the project manager from the discipline, how they perform as a collective team in answering questions. And they score that on how you respond to the questions as a team. I mean, that's a whole different way of thinking. That's a whole different way of valuing relationships. So when you go into these interviews, you damn well better know the guy that you're in that interview with so that you can anticipate how they're going to respond. Because these are questions that they throw at you that you really can't.
So it's a totally relationship-driven industry. It is an industry that's changing, and you got to find out how you fit because it's going to hunger.
I think on a lot of the opportunities that our design board, for example, is maybe a co-mingual competitive selection process, but also it's based on maybe not necessarily the right project team, but maybe something that is an investment of a strategy for future work. But I think, again, the right thing to do is to research the trends and figure out what it is that the field is going to be, because you will want to be the leaders of the industry versus, you know, be reactive to the industry.
It is interesting how it's changing, even for individual consultant interviews in the East, where I've had to work for the last 20 years. Even if I'm interviewing as only the structural engineer or the enclosure engineer, they want to see our team top to bottom, and they want us to answer questions integrally, which is really tricky when you have a young staff member 3, 5, 7 years out of school to get them prepared for that. Telling them just to act like themselves and do their job doesn't overcome the nervousness necessarily they have about being responsible for winning or losing that job. Any questions from the audience? Plenty.
If there were three traits that you value in a consultant and three traits that make you think twice about working with them again, what might they be?
Did you read question number 4?
I know he's been best at least.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm fine.
I get to think about it.
I think the most important trait of anything is honesty. You know, I want transparency with my consultants. I don't want them to smoke up my tail and say, yeah, we can produce that in a certain time frame, because then I go around and say the same thing to my client, and the next thing you know, we all fall down together, right? So, again, I think honesty and integrity is probably the most important thing that I look for. And you know, you can ferret that out pretty quickly by checking references, you know. And references don't have to be calling somebody on the phone. It's talking to people that know them. And that works it out pretty quickly. Again, I'd say honesty and integrity are probably the top two things that I look for.
I have to agree with that, because it touches so many different levels of service. Because if you are disingenuous about your level of expertise at the front end, that's going to come out really, really bad. So never oversell yourself. Always be honest with the skills and expertise that you have, because it will be identified early on if you haven't done that. And then if you have that as kind of a core value that you take into all the jobs, that will serve you probably the best, because it will transcend all things that you do and touch your end process.
I think I would say kind of collaborative outreach to the design team, being part of the team. Not being focused on one task, but actually being engaged in a different way that you are seeing kind of one common vision for a project. So I think collaboration. And then I would say that as a consultant, you have to be a mentor too. I mean, you have to be a leader in what you know, and you have to stand up for what's right for the project.
Good. I saw another question out there.
What's your approach or preference regarding splitting disciplines? And what I mean by that is if you have one or two consultants handling all disciplines versus more specialized consultants